Hello, Park Street. Welcome back. Today is day 10 of Lent, and I'm here with Peg Rauscher, and we're going to read through John 4, 43 through John 5, 16. But before we do that, thanks, Peg, for doing this. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
For those Park Street people who may not know you, could you give a brief autobiography of how you got here and how long you've been coming to Park Street, etc.?
Oh, how I got here. I didn't know I was going to have to say that.
Like Charles Dickens, like the day one I am born.
Yes, yes.
You can start there if you want.
And then I followed breadcrumbs. And then oh, that sounds a long title. I married Mike, which then brought me from Columbus up to Mansfield. And we started our church list of places we wanted to check out to find a church. And Mike worked in Ashland, so we made a list of some churches there and some churches in Mansfield, and we ended up at Park Street.
When did you guys get married?
We got married in 2010.
Okay, cool.
11, sorry. 2011.
I don't tell Tessa, but I can't remember my anniversary either. Last year, I booked a work trip on our anniversary, so that was a mistake.
Well, our anniversary is easy to remember because it's January 1st.
That is easy. Yeah.
That makes it easier.
Cool. Well, thank you for taking time out of your schedule to talk about the Bible with me. I appreciate it. Are you willing to go ahead and read the passage first to get us started?
Sure, except for I didn't bring my copy of it.
Let me get that. Let me just read that. That's fine. I will go ahead and read it.
Yeah.
This is John 4, verses 43 through the end of the chapter, and then chapter 5 through verse 16. And I'm reading from New Living Translation. At the end of the 2 days, Jesus went on to Galilee. He himself had said that a prophet is not honored in his own hometown. Yet the Galileans welcomed him, for they had been in Jerusalem at the Passover celebration and had seen everything he did there. As he traveled through Galilee, he came to Cana, where he had turned the water into wine. There was a government official in nearby Capernaum whose son was very sick. When he heard that Jesus had come from Judea to Galilee, he went and begged Jesus to come to Capernaum to heal his son, who was about to die. Jesus asked, "Will you never believe in me unless you see miraculous signs and wonders?" The official pleaded, "Lord, please come now before my little boy dies." Then Jesus told him, "Go back home, your son will live." And the man believed what Jesus said and started home. While the man was on his way, some of his servants met him with news that his son was alive and well. He asked them when the boy had begun to get better, and they replied, "Yesterday afternoon at 1 o'clock, his fever suddenly disappeared." Then the father realized that that was the very time Jesus had told him, "Your son will live." And he and his entire household believed in Jesus. This was the second miraculous sign Jesus did in Galilee after coming from Judea. Afterward, Jesus returned to Jerusalem for one of the Jewish holy days. Inside the city, near the Sheep Gate, was the Pool of Bethesda with 5 covered porches. Crowds of sick people, blind, lame, or paralyzed, lay on the porches. One of the men lying there had been sick for 38 years. When Jesus saw him and knew he had been ill for a long time, he asked him, "Would you like to get well?" "I can't, sir," the sick man said, "for I have no one to put me into the pool when the water bubbles up. Someone else always gets there ahead of me." Jesus told him, "Stand up, pick up your mat, and walk." Instantly, the man was healed. He rolled up his sleeping mat and began walking. But this miracle happened on the Sabbath, so the Jewish leaders objected. They said to the man who was cured, "You can't work on the Sabbath. The law doesn't allow you to carry that sleeping mat." But he replied, "The man who healed me told me, 'Pick up your mat and walk.'" "Who said a thing such as that?" they demanded. The man didn't know, for Jesus had disappeared into the crowd. But afterward, Jesus found him in the temple and told him, "Now you are well, so stop sinning, or something even worse may happen to you." Then the man went and told the Jewish leaders that it was Jesus who had healed him. So I guess this passage has two kind of back-to-back stories of Jesus doing two miracles, one healing a man's son and, this healing at the pool. Do you want to, it sounds like the second story was one that you were particularly interested in. Is there a reason for that?
There is. Probably about 9 years ago. Well, no, it's probably a little bit longer than that. 9 or 10 years ago, I had listened to a preaching on this John 5. And at that time, God just really pressed on my heart very hard a ministry idea that would be called Bethesda's Pool. And a lot of it is based on the details of the story about the five porches and the aromatic name for Bethesda's Pool is the House of Loving Kindness. And it's the story centers around so many different sick people needing to be well. So I will say that when I studied this out to prepare for this, I thought I was going to focus more on the Bethesda's Pool part of the story because that's what I always study, and I've done a lot of detail on that. But I was actually pretty interested in doing kind of a comparison of the two.
Okay.
So in the first story, they're both opportunities for healing, right? So somebody is in a bad place, either the man's son or hundreds of people literally laying around looking for some healing. But in the first one, the reputation, John really talks about just that whole thing of not being honored in your own hometown.
Yeah.
And I think that there has to be something to that because he makes such a point of it. And it kind of magnifies that, okay, if this is true, that a prophet is not normally honored in their own hometown, that it was that enticement of seeing the miracle. And, you know, we always want the signs and wonders. And I think people are drawn to, you know, this tangible sign and wonder. And then we want that instead of just blind faith where we don't get to see all those results right away. And so here's this official who, when I studied it out, I guess this where he lived was probably about 20 miles from where Jesus was. And so he made quite a trip in that time because it wasn't like you got in your, yeah, like you just got on your horse or, you know, whatever you had to make this journey. So the thing I noticed a lot was that he became aware of a possibility to meet his need for his son to be healed. And he sought it out. And then when he found it, he asked. He acted on what Jesus said. And then he experienced the healing and the increase of his faith. So there's different ways that our faith can get increased. And some of it, I think, is by, you know, being required to take that step and just trusting. So, you know, it's not like, well, I don't want to go see if my son's okay. I want you to come with me.
Yeah.
And so he had the faith to actually
obey.
Right. And obedience is such a, you know, a huge part of our faith journey.
You're right. Well, it's interesting. I'm sorry, I just interrupted.
No, go ahead.
In verse 49, it said that he asks him, "Lord, please come now."
Yeah.
And Jesus doesn't. He doesn't say, "Yeah, okay." He gives him a different set of instructions for him to obey, which is
right.
What you're pointing out, which is cool. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's really interesting because this officer had authority over Jesus. Technically.
Oh, he could have ordered him to come.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, that's an interesting point.
And so, you know, he addressed him with respect. And he did not order him. He requested. And, you know, when he received that answer that he wasn't coming, he was given these orders by Jesus. I think that's remarkable that, especially if you think about that time and the way the hierarchy of things were. So to me, it's like, you know, the other thing that struck me about it was that he obeyed to demonstrate his faith that Jesus was the man who he said he was, or who people were saying he was, or what people had seen. And but he, on his way back, and he ran into these people that came to meet him, came out to greet him and say that, you know, your son is well. He did ask about the timing of the healing. And I think it's okay. I think it shows that it is okay to have that desire to increase our faith by having that confirmation. And so he found out it was the exact moment, which must have meant that he paid attention to what time it was that he was talking to Jesus. So I thought that was kind of cool. That, and then the other outcome of all of it is that it not only increased his own faith, but it brought it to the point where he then shared his faith with his whole household. And so a lot of people came to belief in Jesus because of this man.
Yeah. No, that's really, all that stuff is really cool. There does seem to be this progression of, you know, he knows Jesus has power to heal him, or he came out to him. Maybe he heard about the other miracle he did at the wedding, or I don't know, or some other miracle he did. But, you know, we oftentimes, at least, we come to Jesus with a specific thing. We don't come specifically for Jesus himself at first. We come because we have another need.
Yeah, for the sign.
For the thing we really want.
Right.
And, you know, and Jesus, John puts in here, you know, in verse 48 that, you know, Jesus seems to be, I don't know how I take it, if he's exasperated or if he's just wondering aloud, or if he's pointing this out to the man that you're coming to me for a request, you know, will you never believe in me unless you see miraculous signs and wonders? And that's seems to be something he's going to continue to repeat throughout the book.
Right.
Is that, like, you know, people want proof.
Right.
They're so interested in proof and figuring out everything to such a degree of certainty. And Jesus seems to be questioning why we need to have every single loose end tied up before we believe, you know?
Right. I think it is interesting that in all the times that, you know, Jesus does say that out loud, where, you know, that whether it's frustration or what, was that for the man, or was that for the people that were hearing the man request? You know, it doesn't really matter, because it's even for us today.
Yeah, I think it's also true, though, this whole progression, you know, after you see, you know, you have an issue and you see how God resolves it, right, and then you look back, it does give you that experience of saying, oh, now I have evidence and reason to trust Jesus, you know,
mm-hmm.
like there's, it does seem, at least in my life, too, I don't know if you would agree with this, but as you see, you know, things progress, things you're worried about, things you are praying about or want to change, you know, and they don't for a while, then they do. But as you look back, I guess as more and more your life passes by, it seems to me that when you look back, you can see more and more of how Jesus was doing things that at the time
mm-hmm.
you couldn't really see. And it's like at that point, that's how your faith grows. And I think even though Jesus is somewhat questioning of, you know, why people won't believe in him, he's very patient to allow people to believe at a certain increasing rate and very slowly, which I've found to be true in my life, I guess, too. So I'm glad for that, because we are hesitant to believe, you know, it's not natural for us, you know, even though his son's like, when he gets back, he finds out his son's better, you know, like that's pretty coincidental that he got better in the last 24 hours or whatever, you know.
I think that's why he verified that, so that
he could proclaim
that.
Yeah,
you know?
He went that, but he goes that extra step of, like, you would think that just knowing that he was better was, like, immediately he'd be like, oh, yeah, Jesus is responsible for that. But then he goes the extra step to actually verify time in addition to that. And it's like, what else do you think? What was, like, what else could have happened? It just, he magically got better? I mean, that to me is just, is interesting that's how we tend to be, you know? It's like, you pray for something, it happens. It's like, well, maybe there was something else that happened.
I guess when I was reading it, I thought about how, you know, yes, this guy is is an officer in Herod's service, and yes, he's a, you know, an authority, but he's still a dad, and he was still, like, I just think about, like, you know, situations that happen with, you know, my kids, and, you know, they're not obviously in the house anymore, so I don't always know about when these things happen until they call me, and I'm like, well, when did that happen? Because I'll know that I had been praying and praying and praying. And I was like, well, you know, last night I got, you know, my son was telling me, I got this package in the mail, and it was just the perfect timing. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is what time did you get it? You know, yeah. And I, because it's exciting to know how God was so personal and answered that. Exactly. It wasn't coincidental. You can't leave it to coincidence.
Right.
So.
Yeah. And I don't know. It seems like if he was a government official, he probably wasn't Jewish. I don't know if that really.
Yeah.
I would assume that's the case. And this story comes right after the story about Jesus and the woman at the well. That story starts off with saying he was on his way to Galilee, but he just on the way through Samaria had this other thing happen.
Yeah. Right.
And it is interesting to see that the people, like you brought this up earlier in your. What you were commenting on earlier, but just the people that were supposed to believe Jesus, right? The people in his hometown, he was too familiar. They didn't get it. And the people that you wouldn't think would believe, you know, got it a lot quickly, were more quick to accept. And I feel like do you think that's still true today? You know, the people that we seem closest to Jesus oftentimes just seemingly miss things. I don't know. I'm worried about that. You know, as somebody who kind of has been spent their whole life in a church setting and hearing about Jesus and reading these passages, you know, sometimes we just get so, I guess, desensitized to it that it doesn't really affect us. But when somebody who hasn't heard anything and experiences Christ for the first time, it's like this rush of excitement and happiness because it's just incredible to them. You know?
Yeah, I think that how similar it is to, okay, so say. You know, whatever, your group of your family or your close friends, you know, you come to have a personal relationship with Jesus and they don't, and then it's that same kind of thing, you know, they don't always recognize all the changes because they know you so well. And not obviously that Jesus had any failings as he was growing up, but you know, sometimes familiarity, it's so much easier to, you know, let your guard down and maybe not be as kind with people in your own house. And so a lot of times, you know, people, when they first come to Christ, especially if they weren't raised in a family of believers, that's the hardest to witness to and for them to come to faith.
Yeah, that's interesting. Do you have anything, I guess, that you, when you read through the passage about the man being healed at the pool, there was also a part that I guess I kind of missed, that's in a footnote where it talks about when Jesus talks to him, it says that some manuscripts added expanded conclusion in verses 3 and 4 that says, "For an angel of the Lord came from time to time and stirred up the water, and the first person to step in after the water was stirred was healed of whatever disease he had," which brings up a whole host of other questions as to what that means. But the idea was that the reason he wasn't getting well is because he couldn't get in the water whenever this angel of the Lord came by to stir up the water. So
here's my Bethesda's pool retelling of John 5. So this man, he's been laying around for a really long time, 38 years. That's a long time to invest in laying beside a pool that you have not made it into yet, because he is paralyzed.
Well, but he also must have some level of hope. Otherwise, wouldn't he want to relocate? I mean, he could have had somebody relocate him. I mean, if he was that, no? But
does he? So if you, do you know the definition of insanity? Is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. So just, you know, just he's like chilling there by the pool, 38 years. And, you know, he's trying. So somehow he got to the pool. someone, he must have had some resources at some time.
Right. 38 years ago.
And, you know, obviously he doesn't have the money to pay someone to, like, boot him with their foot into the water when the water stirred or whatever. But the thing that just shocks me about this story is, so here's Jesus walking around, and I'm just picturing all these people laying, you know, and he says, "Do you want to be healed?" And I'm thinking to myself, "Well, duh. What do you think all these people are laying around here?"
Well, it says Jesus knew he had been ill for a long time,
right?
And he points out that he'd been there for a long time, and maybe he had just become, you know, he had accepted his lot in life, you know?
Right. So that's a good way to put it. And so the translation, I've been reading a lot in the Passion Translation lately, because it's just, I like to switch it up sometimes. And it says, "Do you truly long to be healed?" That's what Jesus asked. And so if you'll notice, he did not say yes.
He doesn't answer the question.
He doesn't answer the question. He comes up with an excuse, which is what we do when we don't want to answer the question. We have excuses to why we're not healed from, you know, all these different infirmities or sin in our life or whatever. It's because it's hard work. And so he, you know, to me it's like, okay, first of all, Jesus asks kind of a duh question, and then the man is like, "What do you mean?" All he comes up with is an excuse of, "Sir, there's no way I can get healed." And it's like, well, then why are you laying
I'm
there?
Helpless. I'm helpless to get healed. I can't.
I'm helpless. I'm hopeless. I don't know. So, you know, Jesus, he's very patient. He doesn't do one of his, you know, "Do you have to see the miracles to believe?" You know, like he does with he has compassion on this man. And so he tells him to stand up, pick up his mat, and he will walk. And so it's interesting because he gave him these steps. And he did exactly those steps. He could have just got up, left his mat there. But he did. He obeyed what Jesus had told him. And I think it's really interesting because this man, his life, this was his way of life. And it was hopeless, and he really had, and I don't know if he didn't have a desire to help himself, because obviously at some point in his life he did. But he had lost the resources. And so he was trapped in his infirmities and his excuses, and he was stuck in hopelessness. And he was not aware of Jesus and Jesus' reputation. Unlike the officer, he hadn't heard, because when he was questioned, you know, "Who told you?" He didn't have a clue.
Which is really interesting.
Right.
Jesus didn't say, "I am Jesus.
Yeah.
Give me credit for the thing I just did." Right.
Right. So he was unaware, and he kind of dismissed the offer for healing because it didn't look like what he thought it was going to. He had put all of his, you know, stock in the angel wing that would come down and stir the water once a year or whatever it was. But once he was commanded, he did obey. The thing that intrigues me a lot about this story is that we don't really know where it went from there, other than he obviously was seen by the Jewish leaders, and which is a whole nother thing we could discuss about.
Well, there are some interesting things that you bring that up. So when he rolls up his mat and starts walking, the Jewish leaders objected. Yeah. They say, "You can't work on the Sabbath."
Yeah.
They may have not even known who this guy was. They may not have frequented that area. You know what I'm saying? Like, it seems to me like they didn't immediately recognize this guy was crippled.
That's true, because I've always kind of thought it like they knew it, and they were just more worried about him picking up his mat than he was that he got healed.
Well, do you think that, I mean, the fact that he had a mat may have indicated that he was crippled at one point, or do you think that everyone's just walking around with a mat? You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
To me, it seems like they don't say, like, "Hey, you've got a mat that would be used for a paralyzed person, and you're walking. Like, what's up with that?" Like, they don't even go there. They're well, like, they just yeah. immediately go to like the, it's the Sabbath. You can't do that.
Except which, for if you think about the fact that in this area, there were hundreds, literally hundreds of bodies laying around. Right. So chances are, you know, and they're intelligent men. They probably could put two and two together. And a lot of the footnotes in the study guides indicate that the Jewish leaders were, you know, they were more worried about the letter of the law than the intent.
Oh, right. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, no doubt. But as you read that, it's like, you know, how disconnected are these leaders from suffering and hurting people? There's indication to me, like, I'm not sure, maybe they did know he was, but like, they may have not even been, they couldn't have cared any less about these people around this pool. Right. They could have been just totally disconnected from the, you know, their struggles and hardships.
That's interesting perspective because you're right. But my mind went to, wow, what goes on in this town? I mean, like, everybody just knows everybody else's business. All the, you know, just poof, there's a Jewish leader looking at this or looking at that, you know, and it's like, there's a lot
checking
of activity.
Scoping out what everybody's doing.
Yeah, yeah, a lot of activity goes on in, you know, like even, you know, different places in the scripture where it talks about that they were at so-and-so's house. But yet, there's all these, like, people from the town there as well. So I think there is definitely a disconnect about the hurting and the hurting people.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's
Jesus is among the hurting people. The religious leaders are not
on this out,
in their ivory their, tower or yeah. whatever in their own, you know,
or
world.
In that outer part looking in, you know, and I'm glad I'm not like that, or I'm glad I don't live
right,
there.
Right. Right. Yeah. As you were, you know, the other thing that occurred to me as you were talking was, you know, sometimes Jesus says, must you always, you know, see a miraculous sign? So if I'm thinking about so far through the book of John, who he said that to. And well, I mean, at least, I guess I'm going to let the cat out of the bag that I've recorded some of these out of order. But like, so this guy was a government official. So he was a person in power, some degree of power. And he often says this also to the Pharisees. But he didn't say it to this crippled man. He didn't say it to the woman at the well. You know, it seems right. like there might be a pattern developing of the people that he's chastising for always wanting a miraculous sign are the people who are in power positions that want him to, like, basically state his credentials or show that he's hasn't some kind of credibility to do this stuff. Whereas the people who are right. at the bottom levels of society, he's not nearly as worried or concerned about.
Yeah.
You know? So I don't know if that'll continue throughout the rest of the book. I was just, as you're talking about, it's like, why does he say that sometimes and other times he doesn't? It's like, well, maybe we'll see if that keeps going. I don't really know if that's a thing or not, but it's an interesting thought.
Well, so when I took the two stories and I put them kind of side by side, then I was like, okay, what do we know? There's never too much distance between God and ourselves for him to work or help us. So whether you're 20 miles away and you walk there,
right,
or which in our time would be like, you know, going to a different state, not
right.
going from Ashland to Mansfield. But, you know, so even if we ourselves, like the paralyzed man who felt like it was hopeless.
He couldn't go 20 feet, much less
yeah,
20
right,
miles.
Right, right, yeah. God, you know, that distance is never too much. We can never be so far away from God that he can't reach us. And he doesn't have to be... You know, it doesn't have to be this person. And I know so often, like, when we're struggling or we're really low or in despair or there's just a lot of circumstances going on, you know, we always want that tangible person that we can call and, you know, and hear somebody's voice or put their arm around you or tell you it's okay. But Jesus is that person, and he's always there, and he works through people, but he works through his word and his spirit. So it's just, I just think it's neat that it doesn't matter the distance. whether it's a physical distance or an emotional distance or a lack of faith distance. And the other thing that struck me was that God rested on the Sabbath day. So when it tells, you know, that in the Genesis account how, you know, and then on the seventh day God rested. Well, and that's what the leaders were getting. So they were objecting to this breaking of the commandment or the law. But God does not ever stop doing good, even on the Sabbath.
Yeah.
Because if he did, and one of the notes in my study Bible talked about, can you imagine the chaos that the world would go to if God just rested and, like,
right,
let everything go? And the other thing that struck me is that God's goodness is not a guarantee. We really must obey and act on our belief. So if he tells us to get up, then we need to get up. And
right,
if he tells us to go because he's taking care of it, then we need to go and take care of it. So God's goodness is not dependent on our obedience, but our receiving what we're looking for, what we're praying for, what we're asking for is dependent upon our obedience to listen. Miraculous things can and do happen in our lives. Healings, protections, answered prayers. However, the saving faith, the obedient faith, it facilitates further action and steps of obedience. So it's not enough to just believe the sign or want the sign and say, oh, this is great, you know, I'm good. I got healed from that situation. God always wants us to keep going on in that journey and keep continuing on to build our faith. And then, you know, when we share that with others who are watching, that leads others to Christ. And it has an impact on those circles. And sometimes you will never see that. Like, you may say something to me that really strikes me, and then I share it with somebody else, and you've impacted somebody that you don't even know.
Yeah. So I do think our witness to others is, to the degree we're willing to obey Jesus, is the degree to which we have credibility with other people. And I you know, Jesus says to this guy, you know, he told him, you know, when he's healing him, he says, you know, stand up, pick up your mat. And then afterwards, he finds him in the temple and says, you know, now you're well, so stop sinning or something worse
mm-hmm.
may happen to you. That is, continue in obedience.
Right.
You can't just stop that. That's a very important part of what
right.
it means to follow
yes.
Christ.
Yes, right.
Is to obey him. As what, you know, you're right. I think you're 100% on it. And I think I can feel that. I can feel the Holy Spirit, as you know, in this last couple years, especially my phases of my life, saying, like, you have to obey to a very radical degree. Like, you have to have 100% obedience, or, you know, like, or be, you know, you've got to be moving towards 100% obedience. Like, that's where this is all going. You can't pick and choose what you want.
Well, and it's interesting because, you know, you get this comfort zone of obedience then as your
right.
years go on, and then God says, guess what?
we're gonna push those fences
we're gonna
out.
Push
for,
it
yeah.
out a little bit further. And how about this?
Yeah.
How about this? And that's really a season that I'm going through right now, and it's been just exciting.
Well, that's interesting you say exciting, because I think there is a part of me that's like is kind of thrilled by that. It's like, what if I just actually obey Jesus? What could happen? It's like, it kind of
right.
sounds awesome, but it also sounds scary because it means changing, you know.
Yeah.
It means change, and so that's tough. But you know,
but the cool thing, and you have to find this out experientially, each person, you know, themselves, but you know, the quicker you obey, the easier life is. And, you know, I can remember my son said to me one time, you know, I was giving him some, you know, another one of my mother's stories about, you know, what he could learn from my mistake. And
yeah.
he's like, Mom, I appreciate that, but I have to learn from my own things, you know, and that just struck me as, if I had somebody telling me, you know, don't do that, do this over here, I would just do it. But no, I didn't. No, I didn't, and no, I wouldn't.
Right.
So, you know, it is kind of interesting to have, you know, God just bring you along in that faith building to higher obedience and more obedience and more, and, you know, it's like upping the ante a bit, but, you know, just that how much joy, true joy and peace can come from, okay, I'm going to try to be a little quicker this time and go, okay, no, I'm not going to beat my head against that wall and just trust and obey.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, thanks, Peg. This has been just awesome. I've really enjoyed this time. It's been a terrific conversation. Thank you for participating in this project, and I appreciate your willingness to share. And to anyone who's listening out there, thanks for listening. And I guess we'll catch you tomorrow. So take care.